just have one more comment, is that Appendix N, the management plan, if this requirement is too complicated for Joe Average Farmer, he will just employ a consultant to tick that box. And then we'll put the doc, and then he'll put the document in the bottom of the drawer, and it'll only be brought out when it's forced to be brought out. So the management plans need to include common sense, good practical solutions that are workable by those people that are on the ground doing the day-to-day stuff on our farms. So buy-in of everyone is so important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hamish English. Yourselves to us, but just to let you know, we've read your submission and we've had a look at the material that you sent in by way of evidence as well. So, but over you to you now to present your key points to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Hamish English. I'm a farmer from Dibden. Been farming for 42 years. English family have been resident in Northern South for over 140 years, and we have six generations lived on one single property for 127 years. With Kathleen and her daughter and two sons, we have a family business that provides 35 full-time equivalent jobs for ourselves and staff. We farm out of 11 separate sites with at least 14 identified soil types. We farm on the banks of the Waiau, the Ariti and the Clutha rivers, and also in the Matera catchment. Rainfall variations extend from 1,050 mils at Otahu Flat to 750 mils at Dipton to 400 mils at Bendigo. We hold six effluent discharge consents and nine water take permits, including three for irrigation, to irrigate 650 hectares. Incidentally, that irrigated area delivers an extra 2 million spend on local products and services relative to the previous dryland use. To manage the diversity of climate and soils, it is imperative farming decisions can be made quickly and efficiently. I have made over the last 20 years at least 20 consent applications to Environment South, and this gives me an insight to the ever-changing requirements and efficacy of the consenting process. I have over the past 20 years wintered approximately 60,000 cows, and annually now winter approximately 5,000 to 6,000. The notified rule 23, which includes a requirement for consent over 50 hectares of crop, have queries around, you know, the 50 hectare trigger level, and there's been, I understand, a lot of talk about what triggers and where that level should be, or percentage of a property, etc. I think the bigger question is the rationale for this proposed rule, and I assume that council think that their oversight by way of a consenting regime will reduce nutrient and sediment losses by more than just the application of good management practice. I've yet to hear any explanation of how or why that would happen. However, if the outcome to reduce nutrient and sediment losses, the outcome is to reduce nutrient sediment losses, is this the best strategy? Or will the energy and expense on farm and in council for a consenting process be worth the result? I've tried to think about it in a global sense across the province. For instance, a good management practices on a cropping area may reduce nitrate leaching, for instance, by maybe 10 kgs a hectare. possibly council think that by consenting they would further reduce that by another 5 kgs. And I'm just putting these numbers up just as a for instance. Some simple sums may illustrate the point that perhaps the best returns for our efforts are to retain a province-wide focus. You know, the total farmed area in Southland is about 1.3 million hectares, and I think Environment Southland estimates are possibly 30,000 hectares in winter crop, and possibly 15,000 hectares would fall into the consented bracket. It's 1.2% of the 1.3 million hectares. Now, if we get a result out of the consenting activity for the effort that's expended, the 15,000 hectares, and if we use the figure of 5 kgs less leaching because of council consenting activities, we get a total of 75 tonne. If we were to put those efforts into good management practice across the full farmed area, and we're able to save, for instance, 2 kgs of N, we end up with 2,600 tonne. So I guess that the point is about the relative inputs required and the focus on a small 1.2% area. Are we going to get the real results out of that, or are we better to do the good management practice, put more efforts with the land sustainability team, for instance, into education, etc. Farming has a dynamic and ever-changing set of variables to deal with, particularly in our unirrigated 750mm rainfall area of Dipton. A bureaucratic consenting regime would severely impinge on our ability to adapt to the realities of what climate variation does to our wintering plans for 5,000 cows. A consenting regime grows legs once implemented and becomes over time more complex, time-consuming and expensive. And in the end, when the policy and rule writers are finished with a plan and suitably qualified persons and scientists have had input and the commission has signed off, it's the farmers who actually have to action the plan, who actually have to be the guys out in the paddock or getting up in the middle of the night to shift the cows off a break because they're starting to make a mess, or give them an extra break, etc. And you can't make sets of rules that make people do that. That has to come from within. So I guess specifically I'd like the commissioners to remove the consent requirements for over 50 hectares. It's Rule 23B1B4 and Rule 23C1, which is the references to the three-year average. The province needs to maintain flexibility to provide winter feed for the animals that are here. A better strategy, I believe, is to concentrate on good management practice across the whole farmed area of Southland. Sheep, beef and deer farming need to be fully included in nutrient budgeting and adoption of good management practice. Going on to the Appendix O and N management plan requirements. I fully support the Irrigation New Zealand submission points in whole, and particularly relating to Appendix O and N. Appendix O is with regard to how you evaluate efficient and efficient use of water. There's been a lot of conjecture, I guess, in Southland with regards to what is the actual irrigation use and the requirements. The rebuttal to my submission from the council was that any flow meter data that they have showed that there's nowhere near the usage that people like myself say there is. I think really that data is really just a commentary on how corrupted that data is. Any analysis of that data shows that huge variations in individual farm usage. And I know ourselves, we've had endless difficulties with maintaining flow data capability. You know, to that end, our original irrigation, which is we installed 10 years ago, we've replaced flow meters 3 times, we've replaced data loggers, had recalibrations between flow meters and data loggers and telemetry systems. And to be fair, I think council are aware of those sorts of issues. They have telemetered systems that fail now and again. And so I think the Irrigation New Zealand submission points and I see they've been included, I believe, as part of the Section 42. I would support those amendments.
Yep.
But also to delete Section M of that, Section B of that Appendix O, which is about rolling over existing consents. Environment South and want to use flow meter data, and as I've said, that's pretty much totally corrupted. Just to now get to Rule 52, taking and using of water in Western Southern. it's a big subject and there's a lot encompassed in that rule, potentially going forward. I think as it stands that the Waiau catchment, some provision for access to water in the Waiau catchment must be made to recognise the ability of other water users, apart from Meridian, to provide for social and economic wellbeing. The Meridian submission seeks a new rule 52A and 52B to make every other water use subservient to theirs. Further, they want public notification of any application there of a controlled activity, which simply doesn't make sense, and it's just Meridian trying to make it harder, essentially. I support the yes recommended amendments to rule 52A. Rule 52A, I believe, should have status as a restricted discretionary activity, given it is not enabling greater allocation or use of water. It's simply rolling over consents for what is already in place. Going forward, that Rule 52 is hugely restrictive for any other potential use of water in the Western, in the Waiau catchment. I mean, I've been on a farm in the Taunia Basin that will be operating outside of the plans because the 86,000 cube of water per day allocation will not be sufficient to water the stock on the property. And if they are applying for a new consent, they will not be given one. So short of destocking, they'll be operating a farm that's non-compliant. And those kinds of unintended consequences will continue to arise. The plan also stops any damming or of water, so that's not even an option. I feel it's been an absolute oversight by the council over recent times that Meridian has been given all the water, has totally modified the way out, the lower way out, which has affected nutrient loading, nutrient loadings in that river, which is going to have consequences as far as rules that may be imposed on the farming community to compensate for Meridian's take and the effect that it has on the lower Waiau. It's imperative that West and Southland maintains an ability to take and use water for other uses. You know, my experience on the on our farm at Bendigo, where we take water from the Clutha River, it's Contact Energy is involved there, and their view on water takes is that irrigation water takes are complementary, if you like, to their takes, because their high demand is through winter, and electricity demand is lower in the summer. Meridian have never ever shown any corporate responsibility, if you like, to be good neighbours to the West and Southland community, apart from throwing a few hundred thousand at restoring some wetlands, etc. Whereas, you know, the release of some water at least would enable some economic opportunities that would provide some growth for that region. That's about it, I think. Thank you.
Okay, so we have questions for you, Roy?
I just had one, and it's more of a comment. No, it's a question really to you. You farm quite a large business, and I say business in multiple places throughout the region, out and over multiple catchments. How do you think that the plan should cater for that? Most people would have one property, at the most two, and often they're very similar, but you're over multiple catchments and actually outside of the Southland region. Because some of these things, like winter grazing, they actually accumulate up because you've got a common management structure. So, do you have any view or any comments on that?
The Rule 23 and the requirement for the consenting requirement, we winter cows on four main properties, five properties. Potentially we would have to get a consent for each one, because with seasonal variations we may be growing, you know, 49.9 hectares across those five properties on each one, but you know, some years it might be 70 on one and 30 on the other, or what, a variation of that. So essentially we're up for another five consents and the compliance and all that's entailed with that.
Is it your expectation that multiple properties under the common land holding would only have one consent?
Well,
or are you suggesting that each property would have its own consent because you've got common management?
Well, it depends how they define whether it's about common management or individual ownership. It's different ownership structures across the business. Potentially, we may be viewed as several entities rather than one. I'm not sure exactly what the minutiae of the plan is. But I think the major question is whether the consenting regime is going to achieve a reduction in loss of nutrient and sediment. And frankly, I don't believe that the input of council by way of a consenting process and maybe a couple of farm visits.
You've made that point already, yes, and it's been well made. We don't need to recover that. Okay. So we'll just refocus on the actual questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think the point's been well made.
Thanks, Hamish. That's very comprehensive. Now, I just wanted to ask you about farm management plans, because in your original submission, you were, if I interpret it properly, you were quite critical of them. Mm. Is that right?
Well, it was the Appendix N, the farm management plan requirements, but because I think the Section 42 has made quite a lot of adjustments to that, hasn't it? The report. As I understand it.
Yeah, and some, yeah, that's right.
And I think, in essence, my original submission was written on the basis of seeing a lot of material about, doing farm management plans across a number of properties and thinking a lot of time and effort is going to be required. But I would far sooner do the sort of the updated one than have to get involved in a consenting process.
Right.
Okay. But not both. I don't think we want to do the farm management thing and the consenting process.
Okay, thanks. Now that's been helpful. Now I just had a little bit of trouble interpreting the graphs that you've provided in your evidence as well.
Right.
Could you just explain those so that I understand what they do actually show? I sort of think I do, but maybe not.
Okay. Well, look, there's the two graphs. They just represent flow meter data from two of our flow meters, and they are they represent the water that we've applied to the area.
Yeah.
And so council, I think, believe that council's position is that no one's ever applied more than 300 mils.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just showing that you know, that's 384 mils and 392 mils that we've applied over those two areas.
Oh, okay.
And really it was just to give a counter to the council submission, which was that any of the data they've got shows that no one uses anything like that amount.
All right.
Mm. And so...
You will. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be more than happy to get council to... for instance, do a study of one of these properties and actually see what water is used and the conditions that are actually encountered, rather than the modelling that some of the scientists do, which, I think we could get some real data out of tying that to moisture meters and climate data and actual water use.
You were saying in your presentation before, if I got you right, that the way of measuring the amount of water that's been taken and applied is actually pretty shonky, not very accurate, is that right?
I believe the flow meter, flow metering is inherently inaccurate. And I think that's a comment that, Professor Gluckman, the Prime Minister's advisor, has said, across the country that is the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is attempting to be resolved, I understand, is that right?
The technology, we have a lot of wonderful technology these days, but we continually have issues. These two flow meters, for instance, we spent $20,000 on them this year to get them going. And I have every expectation that we'll spend another five or six next year, and that's just an ongoing.
Getting better all the time, but not perfect by any means.
No.
All right, thanks very much.
Thank you, and I have no further questions. Thank you very much.